Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hello and welcome to the Green 19 Podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. Just a few days away from a road trip for the Packers, looking to break a two-game losing skid, taking on the New York Football Giants. Yeah.
How are we feeling after Monday night, guys? Are we caught up yet? I'm tired.
Yeah, I'm not caught up now.
Yeah, I don't know. It was nice having that extra day.
Yeah.
And then it kind of catches up with you.
You always pay for it on the back end of Monday nights. Home Monday nights are great for the weekend coming before it, but man. And I think the Packers still are, right? Kind of recovering because they had the walkthrough on Wednesday. They have a semi-regular practice Thursday, as Matt LaFleur put it, where it's half pads, then they take the pads off, and they still keep the pace up full speed, but kind of, as you said, throwing them a bone. But they wanted to have at least some pad of work because they got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
They do. And I was even thinking about that, like the balancing act, as they kind of alluded to. And I don't even know if it's so much like a physicality thing with this team, like not playing physical enough, or it's just a lot of technique. Granted, you need it. I guess it doesn't hurt to have pads on and go full speed. But, I mean, a lot of it is just like technical issues, like the operation. So I don't know if it hurt that much for them to not even deal with going with pads. I don't know. But it's still a lot that they have to figure out and kind of work through. So
some of it's physical, too, though. I'm curious, when you guys had some time to marinate on it, how you saw the fourth and one, the pivotal fourth and one. Because it's not a good look to have an Eagles defensive tackle screaming inside zone this way. Like, that's not a good look. I'm not excusing that. But in reality, that stuff does happen. I mean, it's a fourth and one. If Ojomo had said RPO backside this way, that would have been more surprising to me. Or, you know, some type of like play action, like watch the cross, like on a fourth. What else are they? Of course, they're going to run on fourth and one. Josh Jacobs is back there. They're going to run. To me, the much bigger issue, even going back and looking at it, they got their butts kicked off the ball. Like, you can't have your right guard, especially if inside zone's this way, block 2 yards or push back 2 yards off the line of scrimmage into Josh Jacobs' lap. Like, it speaks more to me. I'm curious what you guys saw the same thing.
Yeah.
It speaks more to me to the lack of physical, the issues on the offensive line in the run game that are widespread.
All those things, you know, are true. But there's... The operation was bad because they were hurrying up, and I don't think they really needed to hurry up. I don't think tempo was a big deal. I think they could have at least tried to get them to jump off sides. Now, I realize the clock was ticking down, but it was still, what, a minute and a half? The other thing is that it really didn't matter what they were doing because they were lined up wrong.
Yeah.
And where was anybody from the sideline, from Love, from the tight end on that side to tell Dontayvion Wicks to take a step back? I mean, you know, I saw his comments about it, but if you're not sure, then move back. And if you're a coach, I looked at it several times, and he was right on the line of scrimmage. Yep. There was no, you know, if or and. And how many players, coaches were staring right down the line and could see him covering up the tight end? That's it. That's like malfeasance, you know, that nobody recognized that, and someone in the booth didn't say, call a timeout. It's not going to work. And so not only, you know, all the other stuff is moot because you can't freaking line up straight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they got blown up. That play got blown up, and I just don't think they were ready. I think they were hurrying up. I think everybody was a little bit off. And, you know, I still think it's possible if Josh Jacobs had stayed with it instead of, he got freaked out by the guy calling it out. Mm-hmm. If he had stayed with it, he may have still gotten the first down.
I think he got freaked out by Jalen Carter being right there.
Yeah.
Too. Like, yeah. That didn't help. But so I talked with Dontayvion Wicks about that. And this is just from his perspective. This is what he said. To him, he was sure he was in the right spot because he felt like he was lining up in that same spot all game. And it hadn't been called. It's one of those things where receivers often go into a game early in game. You check with the side judge, hey, this good? We good? And he'll say yes or no. He'll adjust if necessary. He had done that. And then all game, he continued to line up there. And he felt like in that situation, they just happened to call him to be covering the tight end on the line of scrimmage, not
one guard. I don't buy it. I saw the film. I mean, I saw the tape. He's right up on the line of scrimmage. And even if they weren't calling it, you know, he doesn't really have a critical assignment. It's an inside zone.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to get the corner from coming up and making the play in case it bounces outside. But if anything, it's just like a tackle. You make sure that you're not leaning backwards and having a legal formation. It's fourth and one. There's no excuse for anyone. No excuse for Wicks, and there's no excuse for all the coaches on the sideline. And I know Love has a ton of things to do, but he's got to be aware of it too and tell him to, you know, back off. Or the tight end. You always see those guys. They check with each other. Yeah. You know, I'm off. You know, you're on. I didn't see anybody do that because they were hurrying. So, anyway, that kind of operation killed you, and it did.
Mm-hmm. It's so much about this offense when we've talked about the issues that they've had, and I'm just listening. I'm like, where's the focus at? Like, where is everyone not locked into the assignment? Because I even think about the Aaron Banks false start. He thought they were going tempo.
That's a focus thing.
They weren't going tempo, and, like, that's why he went early. And then you just mentioned the assignments and why they're not lined up. So there's just a lot here right now. And it's just very obviously concerning that you're at this point in the season and these are some of the mistakes that are still rearing its ugly head. So that it's something that they're going to have to take a hard look in the mirror and figure some things out, even though this Giants team on paper, not a great team, because they still have a solid defense up front. I mean, that front group is really, really good. I think about guys like Dexter Lawrence, who can create some issues in the middle, and, you know, Abdul Carter, so many guys. So
Brian Burns is
11 Madness. Sacks? Yeah, 11 sacks this season.
Abdul Carter, Kevion Thibodeau.
It's a test for the offensive line.
Another one. Yeah, it's going to be huge. Well, you can run on them. I mean, the last four games, they've given up like over 800 yards of rushing. So, or 700 and something. So if you can't run on them, then there's something really wrong. But they got after Caleb Williams. It's just that Caleb Williams last week was making plays all over the place. Mm-hmm. And they'll get after it. If the Packers end up throwing 40 times, they're in trouble.
Here's the question, Spoon. Can they run on them? We'll find out.
Yeah.
Because they should be able to run on them. They Giants run defense is not good. Giving up over 5 yards per carry. That's not good. But can this offensive line run on anyone? That's what I want to see.
Right. And, you know, you haven't so far, and to me, it's, okay, what haven't we tried? What can we do to make this better? And I still am a little perplexed that they haven't tried Anthony Belton. I mean, just throwing a 336-pound guy out there, he's a second-round pick. It's not like he's not an athlete. God bless Darian Kennard, and he's a solid player, but he's not 6'6", 336, mm-hmm. and 34-inch arms, and Anthony Belton should have been the extra tight end. So, you know, you want to be able to run behind him and Rashid Walker or him and put him at right guard or whatever. I just don't see them ever doing anything to act like they're in a little bit of a crisis, which they are.
Yeah.
They don't act like there's a problem.
Yeah. It is weird. It does seem like it's just like a weather the storm mindset. It's right. like every team goes in a slump. You're going to get through it. It's fine. Injuries, yeah. You know. Trust the process. Like all of the cliche terms that are used in sports. And yeah, that is an interesting way of looking at it. So I don't know how what happens. We even talked about it, and you guys even mentioned how like all bets are off. Who knows? Throw in an Anthony Belton, see maybe if you got something else, Jordan Morgan at left tackle, whatever you have to do. I am curious, at least from the interior perspective, what will it look like and what will the operation continually look like a full game with Sean Ryan at center? That's something that I am wondering because, you know, talk to him in the locker room Wednesday. And it's really fascinating. He did even talk about this, which stood out to me. He said, because I asked him about the operation, what's it going to be like in this situation now? How do you navigate being center? He said, yeah, I know I got a lot, but I don't care. We just got to run the ball. He didn't even hesitate running the ball. Even the follow-up, I said, I was like, well, here's the million-dollar question. How do you, like, run the ball? And he said, he even talked about it's just the mentality. Like, you have to strain a little bit harder. You have to push.
You got
to
move bodies.
You have to, like he said, that's the straining part. Like, the technique, you have to do it. You can't just let up or you have to get off the ball. You have to do all those little things right. We'll see if they do it. You know, it's like you talk about it, but we'll see if they actually do it in this game.
I'm of a mind, they don't have any other choice but to continue to work on their run game to make it better.
Yeah.
And you have to run the ball to do that. You don't make the run game better by not running the ball. They have to run the ball as much as they have. Josh Jacobs needs his 20 carries, and they have to get over 4 yards per carry. Josh Jacobs needs to break a couple runs. Because defenses play him this way, they are daring you to run the ball. They are saying, you're not going to throw it over our heads. All right, that's what this Packers offense has done well when it's been good this season. You're not going to do that. We're daring you to run the ball. You have to run the ball so that you get him out of that defense. If they don't run the ball better, nothing else really matters. They're not going to get to where they want to go this season if they run the ball like this. And by like this, I don't mean volume. I don't mean quantity. I mean quality. I mean efficiency. If they are not better at running the football, they will not get there. So that is job number one. And the only way to do that when you're going against Tuchel especially is to run the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you got to play to your strengths. So Sean Ryan is a good run blocker. Mm-hmm. He's not going to pass block like Elgton Jenkins. Right. He is not as nimble. He's not as experienced. He lunges. If they're throwing it 30 times, then they're in trouble because he's just not going to hold up one-on-one like Elgton Jenkins could. If you run, you know, play to his strengths, it's possible that you can get something done. You can move Dexter Lawrence a little bit out of the way with some double teams. Yeah. Or you can, you know, suck them into the wrong gaps and you can run. But only if you're committed to it. Like you said, run the ball. Play to your strengths. You got to play differently until you're running so well that, you know, play action can slow down another team's pass rush. But right now, play action does not scare anybody.
No.
So they have to get to running the ball.
That's the key.
You made a couple good points there. One, I've heard it from a lot of fans on the social media. Oh, their play action usage is way down. You got to do more play action. You can't play action's moot if you don't provide a run threat.
Yes.
And they're not providing a run threat. So if the defense knows they're not really a threat to run the ball and then you throw play action at them, it does not have the same effect.
No.
Usage is out the window. They have to run the ball better for that to be effective in the play action game. And then as far as Sean Ryan goes, I'm intrigued to see what he can do at center. If they do that, if they play to their strengths, which, let's face it, it's a big if. We don't know. But if they do, he's their best interior run blocker. He is as close as they have on the interior to a rugged power run offensive lineman. And that is what this offensive line dearly needs, specifically on the interior, is a body mover, someone who's not going to get knocked back. Sean Ryan does that, but he's always done that pretty well. Like that's the strength of his game. So I'm intrigued to see if that can help kind of jar the run game loose a little bit, having that type of guy in the middle of the offensive line.
It's the only way you do it.
I would like to see them try Belton at right guard and rotate Morgan and Walker. And because they never really had a real competition between Morgan and Walker. I mean, they were very much locked in on Walker. And let those two battle it out. And if you put Banks, Ryan, and Belton together and you can't move people, all right, then at least you tried it. But you put those three guys up there, you should be able to move some people.
You're saying the experiment of Jordan Morgan at right guard should be over.
I think it should be. I mean, I just think he's a left side player. He's been a left side player his whole career. I'm not saying he couldn't play right guard, but you're not playing very well. Your whole team's not playing very well. Shake something up, you know. Find out whether Morgan's a better option. Rasheed Walker's going to be gone after this year, and he's going to get paid, even though he's got, definitely has some parts of his game that aren't consistent. But he's going to get paid, and then Jordan Morgan's going to be your left tackle next year. Mm-hmm. So why are you waiting on that? Take a look at it now and see if it's worth making that move now.
Yeah. No, for what it's worth, I completely agree with you on that.
Just try it.
Sometimes we disagree, Spoon. On this one, we see it the same exact way. I completely agree with you on that.
What does it hurt?
Not only is he not a right side player, I don't think he's really a guard.
I don't think so either.
He's a left tackle.
He's a tackle.
That's good because left tackles are important. But I'm at a point watching. They tried this with Jordan Morgan. They stopped moving him around. They said, you just learn this, be this every week, see if you can be consistent. They've tried this. And after seeing it, I just can't bring myself to believe that he's a better option at right guard than Anthony Belton, who is built like a guard, like 336 pounds. Like there's some power there, some ruggedness there that they're dearly missing with Jordan Morgan in the interior of the offensive line. So Sean Ryan at center, Anthony Belton at right guard, and then the coaching staff decides who's the better left tackle, which they'll probably say Rasheed Walker, which means maybe Jordan Morgan doesn't play. If it is Jordan Morgan, you put him at left tackle. You have him battle it out, but I could not agree with you more on that.
I guarantee you if they rotated those two guys, Morgan would at least maintain his half of the job. I don't think they'd ever just rely on Walker. I mean, you would want to rely on one guy, but I don't think there's anything wrong with having two left tackles. You did it at guard for quite a while, and it wasn't horrible. All this stuff wouldn't necessarily be on the table if you were, 7-0-1 or something like that. But 7-1-1, whatever. But you're not. You just lost two games at home to in two games where you couldn't put any points on the board.
The reason you rotate there is if you are trying to decide who is the better left tackle, then you put them both in the game to give you some real sample size to make that evaluation. And then once you come to that determination on who is the better left tackle, you can stop rotating then. But if you're trying to decide who is the best left tackle, can Jordan Morgan be a better left tackle than Rasheed Walker? Rotating him is the way to do that.
Yeah. And that's what they – I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Last thing. That's what they should have been doing from the very beginning of the season. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then by now you could have chosen.
Yeah, it's late.
Yeah.
It's November. Thanksgiving's coming up.
Right.
Yeah.
But, so now you got to do it, I think.
Yeah.
But
that's the thing.
No,
they won't. But the issue is, you need a spark on offense, but I think the spark does start up front. Like, what is the key to getting some success there? So, and at this stage in the game, I do feel like, you have to try to focus on 2025, but you also need to have your eye on 2026 and what you have with Anthony Belton, with the Jordan Morgan. And even in my opinion, I think this stretch might even be really big for Sean Ryan. To see if he comes back next year or not.
He might be the center next year.
He might be the center. So in ways, this is kind of like auditions for some of these guys to see what you can do moving forward. So I'm wondering if something up front, maybe that this is a spark in some way if they were trying to experiment.
One last thing. They have to figure out what's wrong with Aaron Banks. Because he's a 4-year starter coming from a good offense where he played solidly – You know, they overpaid him, no question. He's not an all-pro, but he's a better player than what he has showed here. He's not been very good. And that their job is to get him playing like he was playing in San Francisco. I don't know what has happened to him, whether something's gotten in his head, you know, if he gets down on himself, or if it's, you know, they've made him play differently or their plays are different. I don't know what it is, but somebody needs to fix that. And that's what coaches are for, you know, fix him.
Yeah.
Figure out why he's not playing well, because you just paid a crap ton of money for him,
yes,
you know.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as like with Nate Hobbs. Okay, so you sat him down, you know, on defense. They said, all right. Take a breather here, and we'll work you back in and get your confidence back up. Somehow I don't mean they have to bench Banks. I just think someone's got to figure it out.
That's true. He's just – and I don't feel like he really has ever been in a rhythm. I know he was hurt going back to training camp, but maybe that first half in Detroit, maybe.
I thought the first game in Detroit he played really well.
That
and then
was.
Even against Washington, I think he played pretty well. And then all of a sudden it just kind of – I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Dominic, I want to maybe rephrase here because, yes, Sean Ryan, through the rest of the season, is playing for maybe being the starting center next year, and there's some questions that they need to determine on this offensive line with Jordan Morgan, with Anthony Belton, for 2026. But this is an all-in season.
Of course, of course.
And the time is not now to think about 2026. The time is now to fix the problems that are going to prevent them from making the most out of this all-in season in 2025. And the biggest problem with this offense is the offensive line, but I think the place to start is, as Spoon alluded to earlier, lining up right. Not killing yourself with self-inflicted penalties. The Packers, among 22 teams in the league who have already played their bye, so they've only played 9 games, the Packers are 6th in total penalties, but they're 5th in those self-inflicted false starts plus illegal formations. They had 3 of those against the Eagles. Each one of those was killer, right? Now, the Dontavian Wicks one ultimately is easy to forget because there were other problems on that play, too, that they didn't get it anyway. They fumbled. They didn't get to the marker. But had they, it wouldn't have mattered because it was 5 yards back. The Aaron Banks false start is complete, and he owned it after the game. I give him credit for that. He took accountability. He said, I had a bad moment. He thought it was a quick count. It was not a quick count. Thinking it was a quick count, he was trying to anticipate knowing it was a 4th-and-1 sneak for Jordan Love. They converted it. But 5 yards back, wipes out the first down. They have to punt. Kills a drive. And then maybe the biggest one of the game was the illegal formation early in the fourth quarter, the first of 2, where, you know, this is the week to dump on Matt LaFleur. And I think it's fair because we've seen a sample size now of issues that have taken this team with elite talent and made them render them mediocre at 5-3-1. If they stay mediocre, he is absolutely coaching for his job. Ed Policy has said that there will not be a lame duck situation next season in 2026. Matt LaFleur has 1 year left on his contract. It is 2026. The only way to avoid a lame duck situation is to either fire him or extend him. And if they are mediocre with elite talent in an all-in season, that very clear defined expectation of Super Bowl or bust, I don't see how they extend him. So, yeah, he's coaching for his job. But I think it's also important to criticize Matt LaFleur for the right things and distinguish what maybe are the wrong things. For example, I think that he has no choice but to continue to run the football at volume. They have to work on it. They have to figure that out or they will stay mediocre. So I'm not going to criticize him for that. I agree with that. I agree with Matt LaFleur when he says this happens all the time. Defenses, offenses, everyone. It's not the first time in the history of football that a defense has known what play is coming. You have to still knock back and get that yard. I agree with that. Where you can, I think, criticize him fairly is that this is a team that is still committing way too many self-inflicted mistakes that are killing drives, keeping points off the board. And it is – Jordan Love – I asked Jordan Love, you know, does getting guys lined up fall under your purview as quarterback? He said, yeah, everything falls under my purview as quarterback. And I think it's admirable. I think he's correct. But it is ultimately Matt LaFleur's responsibility to make sure that all 11 players know exactly what to do on every single play. That is coaching 101, and that has not happened enough. And that early fourth quarter illegal formation is a great example of – at the start of last week, when they go to Darian Kennard and say, hey, you're playing some tight end this week, jumbo package. He had never played that position in his entire life. So they give him very specific, exact plays to learn that are going to be jumbo package for Monday night against the Eagles. And they run those in practice. One of them that they did not run, they ran the same. They practiced a play in which they hit Christian Watson for a 22-yard catch on a crosser out of the jumbo. Darian Kennard was on the field. By the way, he played four snaps in the jumbo package. They threw twice. The first one was a 20-yard catch to Christian Watson. The second one should have been a 22-yard catch to Christian Watson that put him inside the red zone for the first time all night. There was some success there. But in the terminology of the play call, Matt LaFleur sent in a formation that they had not practiced. You have a tight end who's never played tight end before, who has not practiced this formation, who is a tackle by trade, lifelong, who has always lined up on the line of scrimmage. And yes, Darian Kennard, you can say, should have picked up the terminology to know that he should have been a yard back, because he should have been, because Bill Melton would have been covering him on the line of scrimmage. But they had not practiced that formation all week, and then on a critical play in the fourth quarter, they trot that out. You got to practice the plays, the formations that you're going to use in big moments in the game. They did not do that, and it absolutely cost them. That, I think, is fair.
No question. So now I guess we can move into defense a little bit. I guess the biggest thing that stands out is Jameis Winston. That'll be the QB that the Packers will go against, the very colorful Jameis Winston. But, I mean, he's a guy, he's played in this league a long time.
They've overlooked him before.
They have. Exactly. I was thinking,
he's number 21.
Was it 20? Yeah. So he's going to let it rip. I think that's the funniest thing about it. He's going to play free. He's going to play loose, I would expect.
He's going to give you three to four plays where you can pick him off. And if you don't, you know, that's on you.
That's true.
You know, but he's going to give you those opportunities.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, he's going to chuck it to Wandell Robinson and Malik Nate. Like, he's not going to be – you could say he'll be careless with the ball. But at the same time, he just – hey, let's see if these guys can make plays. So it's going to be an interesting assignment for this defense to continually be patient, because not press, and because obviously they watch the film too. They know what Jameis is going to do, but – this is one of those games I'm curious if they will stay in their assignments and not try to get overly greedy and not try to just, like, go after that hero play.
They have to get after him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the interior, the Giants have a great left tackle, Andrew Thomas. You know, they have two guys some of the Packers are familiar with, two former Packers, John Runyon and Greg Van Roten. They have to make their hay there, up the middle. You know, I suspect we're going to see Parsons coming up the middle quite a bit. They have to dominate and get in Jameis Winston's face. If they can do that, they'll be all right. I mean, I think then they got a pretty good shot. But if they're just not, you know, don't have their game like they at times didn't have it against Philly, although that's a much better offensive line, I think it's a simple recipe. You don't have to go for interceptions. You got to go for sacks. You got to get this guy on the ground. You got to pressure him. Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah. So is anything you're curious about with Jameis Winston or just this matchup or the Packers defense heading into this?
I'm curious how the pass rush gets to him. I don't think there's a specific, like, this area against that area for this team. It's just this should be a get-right game. But – the key word of that is should, right? I mean, this should you are playing a team that just fired its head coach and has a backup quarterback. Even on the road, this should be a get right game. But does that even exist for this team right now? That's what I'm looking for this week. Can they get right? Can they start to turn the tide. And then we'll talk about the what they do at home against the Vikings next week, because you have to continue that. But they first and foremost have to stop the bleeding of this season. And this is an opportunity this week to do that. I don't know that they will. We'll have to see.
You also, I think you have to expect the unexpected in this game. I know Mike Kafka's been the offensive coordinator, but now he's in charge. Who knows what he might even try to, what wrinkle he might try to throw in as the play caller on the offense, or maybe the guys will have some energy and play inspired with an interim coach. So, I mean, you see it a lot when the interim coach comes in the first game, the guys might actually be inspired, maybe not. So I'm just wondering if the Packers will match the potential energy that the Giants could come out in this game and just perform on the road.
They have to. Yeah. They have to. There's no reason they shouldn't beat the Giants. They're missing their best receiver, Malik Nabers. Mm-hmm. You know, Scatterboo, their running back, is out. Jackson Dart, their very promising quarterback, is out. I mean, if you can't win that game, and I'm not saying, you know, the Packers couldn't beat Carolina. They didn't play well against Philadelphia. They've lost to Cleveland. It's not out of the question that they would lose this game. Mm-hmm. But everything is in their favor, and if they don't win it, and they don't win it convincingly, then I think we know a great deal more about their team.
I really was leaning toward picking the Giants had Jackson Dart played. I think that could have been a scary situation for this team. I'm picking the Packers, and I think they're going to win.
There you go, spoiling it again.
Yeah, well, you know, sorry, another subscribers.
Subscription down the toilet.
I think we lost four last week. Down two more today.
Terrible business model. Just wrecking all our plans. But I'm picking the Packers because I don't have that same fear of Jameis Winston. I think that they should win this game. I think with Jackson Dart, that would have been a really scary matchup, very DeVito-ish of 2023. But, hey, I've been wrong the last 3 weeks because I have no idea with this team right now. No clue. So no. Just because I think they should win – I mean, that's the expectation I have for this team going in. Doesn't mean that they will, and if they don't, 5-4-1. Do you guys buy what Xavier McKinney said this week, that this is a must-win game?
Yeah.
I kind of do. Yeah. I mean, they're not – by no means are they out of it with a fourth loss, but they got to get out of the tailspin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an NFC game. They got to – done okay in the NFC – the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, really, what are must-win games are the division games. Those are the must-win games. They have to beat Minnesota. Mm. They absolutely have to beat Minnesota. They have to at least split, which is a possibility, with Detroit. And then Chicago's going to be, mm-hmm. that's going to be a dogfight, you know, both games.
Yeah.
And so those are the games that are must-wins to me. So, yeah, I kind of agree with them, but I really think the Vikings game is more of a must-win than this.
I'm just picking semantics here. For me, a must-win game means that you must win it or your season is over. Like, that's a big statement to be a must-win game. I don't think their season is over if they lose in New York. So I would say it's something less than a must-win game, but not by much. I mean, awfully – I don't know what the term is. Maybe you guys can help me out. I don't know what the term is for, like, just one peg below must win. Mm-hmm. But that's what it – like, it is an extremely important game to win.
Yeah. Need to win.
You cannot lose three straight. I don't know. But you can and turn it around. You really don't. Yeah, you know, and I'll tell you this. After 4-6 to run the table in 2016, I try to, like, really not – I'm very careful with what's a must-win game, because even if they lost their third straight game, they're 5-4-1, they're not as – dire straits is 4-6 in 2016 through 10. So, but they're really, really sinking at that point, and they gotta start staying afloat more. So it's really close to that. I don't know if it's quite that, but it is really, really close to that.
It is. I just think that, I mean, momentum is a big thing in this league, and you need to find something in this game. You look at the last 2 weeks, what hasn't worked? Find something that'll work in this game. You can build some confidence on it, and you can use it when you head into the even more so the must-win games with the Vikings, with the Lions, with the Bears. But, I'm not, you could say, going to say that it's not true in ways that it's must-win, but more than anything, confidence. You have to find
something. I almost think like that's my – you just said it the right way, Dominique, where it's just like this might not be a must-win game, but it's a must-figure-your-crap-out game, and if you figure your crap out this week, you will win the game. So, like, by proxy, it might be a must-win game because they must figure their stuff out.
Yeah,
like that must happen. They cannot continue to bumble through this schedule, especially with those division games coming up.
Yeah, just play clean and just have your energy. Just all the little things that we've been talking about. Just cut down on some of those things. Cut down on some of the procedural penalties and the false starts, the pre-snap, just clean up on some of that stuff and have a little bit of that. I guess it is like a feel-good type of moment, you know, leaving out of New Jersey with the win.
Or just have your defense shut them out, you know, and yeah. I hope you can kick a field goal. You know, or maybe
3-0. 3-0. Here it goes. That's your prediction.
The one-point safety that has never been done in the NFL.
2-0. 2-0. Something like that. You got the 2-0 score
of Gami
going on?
You can do a 1-0 score of Gami. Okay. You can. Yeah, it's a very rare play. But I was looking it up the other night. I don't know why. Don't ask me why. But I was...
I think I know why. Could this happen with this team?
It could happen.
I will be so annoyed if it happens. I'm going to be sitting in the press box just like... Like if I was like if I yeah, thought if I didn't like
history.
Oh, I'm here for it. That'd be fun. That would be the opposite of like here you yeah. go, subscribers.
So do you know how that safety thing works? So it has to, well, actually, it can't be 1-0. I take that back because it has to be an extra point. And so it would have to be 6-0. I guess it could
so
be.
So you're looking at 2-0.
It could be 10-1. That's the score. It's really weird. So you have to kick. So you have to be kicking an extra point, okay? And it gets blocked, or it's a 2-point conversion. It goes in the end zone, and the guy tries to run it out. The defense tries to run it out, but he fumbles back into the end zone, and his own team recovers it. That's a safety, but it's only a 1-point safety because it's an extra point.
Okay, so there you go.
That's how you get 1 point.
Subscribers, he has told us, Spoon has Packers winning 1-0 this week.
Don't ask me why I know that.
If this happens, first off, I'm going to ask you the lottery numbers that night, if it does happen. But also, oh my gosh, that would be the funniest thing ever, and I will save this clip, and it'll go on social media, and Psychic Tom Silverstein or something, but... Yeah,
where would you set the over-under for Packers points this week? They've scored 20 the last 2 weeks at home.
I was thinking about that.
Where would you set the over-under for Packers points?
24.
Okay.
Like 21, yeah. Oh.
I would say 21.5.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if they go over-under that.
It's so hard to say. I guess I hate to say, like, we'll just see how the game starts. Because, I mean, if they can... If we're watching, especially those first couple of drives, and I'm like, okay, they're moving the ball, they're running it well, they're good things are happening right now. There's some holes for Josh Jacobs. Then I'd be like, okay, they'll score, but
I could see them winning 20-9. I could see them winning 34-17, 20. But yeah, I could see them losing because they're liable to lose to anyone right now. They're all over the map to me.
They are. I mean, that's the thing. All of what. 3 weeks ago, they scored 35 in Pittsburgh, and now they had a combined.
It's in there.
And had a combined 26 in the last two. They scored 7 points. I'm not doing math anymore, but it was not even mounting 35 in the last two games. So, yeah, we'll see how that all plays out. So, I don't know. We can wrap things up. Any final words or thoughts? Special teams? Yes, they have two kickers on the roster. We've talked about that ad nauseum.
I've made my feelings clear.
Right.
How is it? Okay. My last thing is: how is it that the Eagles beat the Packers 10-7, and the biggest controversy is out of Philadelphia, where their star wide receiver thinks their offense is a show. And in Green Bay, nobody is like saying anything, you know, like, oh, okay, I guess we lost, you know, and they're on to the next game. And Philly, they just won a, you know, a really hard fought game, and there's controversy all over the place. So just a little different kind of a world that we're living in here than in Philly.
The worst coaching decision made Monday night was from Nick Sirianni for going for that fourth down instead of punting.
Maybe he was – wasn't that to A.J. Brown? Was that last one to A.J. Brown or to Devonta Smith?
I don't even
remember.
I thought it was A.J. Brown. Like, maybe he was just trying to smooth things over with him by throwing deep there.
I think that we have been reporting on the issues this week pretty heavily. I think also that the issues are so plentiful right now that it is a bit difficult. Like, the entire house is on fire with the offense at the moment. It's difficult to report on everything at once. Like, you have to almost prioritize, and that's what I tried to do this week. Like, where do they start? And to me, again, I think they start by, like, just play clean. That's not the only – like, if they just play clean, they have other issues. But you start by playing clean and not having procedural – penalties on 2 fourth downs and another procedural penalty on the biggest play of the game. It's 3-0 when that pass happens to Christian Watson. They're in the red zone. They have momentum. If you finish that drive at 7-3 with the way your defense is, like, it's not just that they had 3 procedural penalties. The worst times to have procedural penalties in a game all occurred. You have to – so where do you start? You have to start there, and then you move to, okay, this is shored up. They're playing clean. They're not killing themselves at the worst times. What next? Well, what next? The offensive line, right? What next? Surviving without Tucker Kraft. The quarterback has to play better. He hasn't played very good the last 2 weeks. I mean, he hasn't played terrible. He's not the biggest issue on offense. But as a quarterback league, Jordan Love does have to be better than he was the last 2 weeks. Like, there are so many things that they have to get better. It's, to me, where do you start? They start by not screwing up unforced errors at the worst times.
Yeah. I will say this. This team has been the gift that keeps on giving. You know, you don't stop. There's always something to talk about. So even, I mean, from a media
perspective,
I would say from a media perspective, like, this is more entertaining than it's like if they were 9-0.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, they won again. They did this. That, yeah, so
exactly.
And so I'm fascinated in hearing. Like, I get emails from people, like, asking things or what's wrong or what they think is wrong. And I'm like, I think it's entertaining. I'm like, hey, that's part of the job.
So, you know, the old adage of you'd rather, you know, it gets boring if a team's always good or always bad, because then they're just really, really good or they're really, really bad. This team is neither really, really good or really, really bad. It is very much in the middle, and in the middle is where you find a lot of interesting stuff.
It's true. So, hey, the fans are ready to, you know, jump off the bridge, but, hey, I'm just
ready to
head to New Jersey.
One more thing. Can we all agree – even if they lose this week, they're not firing Matt LaFleur.
Not during the season.
They're not, there's that chatter out there. If you fire Matt LaFleur or any coach midway through a season, you are aborting that season. You are pulling the plug on that season. This is a Super Bowl or bust expectation season. They made that very defined, very clear when they traded for Micah Parsons and auctioned off their future first-round picks for the next 2 years to do that. They're not aborting 2025. They are going to be committed to trying to figure it out.
They made a mistake in 18 when they did that with McCarthy. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, that was more of an Aaron Rodgers thing. And if they'd have stuck with McCarthy, I still think there was a remote chance they could have made the playoffs. They were pretty bad after that. I mean, they were bad at that time, but that just wasn't smart. You just don't do that in the middle of a season unless – you know, if you're the Giants and everything's – guys just making really bad decisions, then okay. Right. But, you know, I don't think it's – not a guy who's won 13 games 3 times.
It's aborting the season to do that, right? Like, you're not – the world does not exist where you elevate Jeff Hafley and then they make the Super Bowl run.
Probably not. No,
right. I guess that was going to be the part of it. It's like, who would they feel comfortable
right.
taking over as interim. Right. Like, not Rich Bisaccia or, well, it'd be, you know, Jeff Adam Hafley. Stamets. But, yeah, it'd be.
But then how does that fix the offense?
Maybe Hafley, yeah.
That would just hurt the defense.
Exactly. Yeah, so, yeah, they're.
It's not happening.
No, it's not. No. It's not. I mean, again, it's
just wanted a little sanity.
True. It's a two-game slump. They just won in Pittsburgh 3 weeks ago. A two-game slump. Granted, you got to right the ship, but, oh, my God, a three-game losing skid, they're fired. No.
Like, well, I think it's less about a two-game slump and more about, like, the expectations could not be more clear. The expectations are nothing less than a very legitimate Super Bowl run, and they are not doing that if you fire your coach in the middle of the season. It's just not happening.
No. I mean, what? Even, I know this isn't something to get into, but, I mean, the Chiefs, what, went 11-6 when they won a Super Bowl before. So it's all about getting hot when you get deep into the season. So we have not reached that yet. We're there. We're kind of getting there, but – yeah, it's. I think it would be pretty crazy if any move was made at this point.
And by the way, the last time the offense was this bad was 2023, where they couldn't score in the first half.
Second half.
And Matt LaFleur did figure it out in the second half of that season. Like, let's not be prisoners of the moment. Letting him try to figure this out through the course of the second half of the season is the best option forward. It doesn't mean that he will. And if he doesn't, he'll be in trouble. But that's the best course of action.
I think he at least deserves to see if he can figure it out. Like, they at least owe that to him because, as Spoon mentioned, like, he's won a lot of games. They at least owe it to him to see if he can, you know, right the ship, if you will, at the end of this season. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be fascinating. But until then, let's check out Times Square and just take in the areas and sights and sounds and get ready for a football game that is at noon.
You going to Times Square, Spoon?
I don't think I'm going to have the time to do it.
No.
So,
no,
I don't think I'm going to make it.
Maybe. We'll be there.
Well, maybe we can get some all pizza right. or something yeah. at some point while we're there. So
yeah.
we're going to have a good time, guys, and appreciate it as always. And thank you for checking out the Green 19 podcast. For Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominique Yates.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.